Hi, and welcome to our podcast, Design Me a House. I'm Dawn Oliveira, textile designer and educator. And joining me is the driving force of this collaboration,
Katie Hutchison, architect, designer, author.
And today, on episode 2, which we're calling This With That, we'll be discussing the art and angst of designing a house and or the furnishings within it. Art because this is, of course, an imaginative, creative, fun journey, and angst because, let's face it, sometimes the decision processes can be overwhelming. From site selection to soft furnishings, the design decisions you make are the ones you will live with, maybe for a long time. What style choices do you make as you design a house? How much stuff do we really need in our homes? Katie and I offer our tips and advice through a collective multiple decades of experience as designers. Let's get started.
All right, we're rolling. So one thing I wanted to say just from the get-go, since we're hoping to revisit this topic, this with that,
we have to,
in future episodes.
Now I realize.
This one, I'm thinking we want to be kind of the general broad stroke overview. And then we'll get, hopefully, in future episodes, kind of narrowed in, focused down.
I can see how that would work, especially today. I was reading three different books on style and all kinds of
you
style.
You went deep.
Caribbean style, Portuguese style, like all kinds of things. I just got into it.
You took off.
I took off.
So let's just start, maybe since you sound like you've done some preparation.
A little.
Why don't we have you from your designer, surface designer, textile designer
pattern,
point of view.
Surface pattern designer.
Yeah. Talk about just in a broad way.
Okay. So, yes. So I'm a surface pattern textile designer. I have been for more than 30 years. So when I think of this with that, or we discuss this with that, I think of all of the soft textiles and furnishings that are in a home. And so how do you choose those furnishings? Which ones do you choose? How do you pair and layer different textiles in your home, in different rooms in your home? And that includes color of those textiles. How many patterns can you mix? And it can be overwhelming, but I think if you have a sense of style of your own, and it can be very simple style and neutral color, or it can be kind of wild, lots of mixing of patterns and bright colors, etc. In the end, it's about balancing maybe old with new and pairing antiques with new modern pieces, vintage textiles with some newer textiles, and how much pattern do you want in your house?
I want to go even further back just in terms of what initial decision leads to the next decision. And I think one thing you were talking about in advance when we first discussed this, where there's even certain, like, say I knew my decision, I'm starting with a fabric, a certain type of fabric. Is that going to then, limits the wrong word, direct me to a certain set of decisions because I chose fabric A? Or kind of what are the first things that set me on a path in the beginning in a direction of starting to make these choices that kind of pile on top of each other?
Okay. Well, you're in a home of some sort, whether it's a newly built home or an apartment or an old home, and you want to introduce pattern into the room. Where do you start? Is that what you're asking?
I'm saying if I've made my first decision is so far out, it's just a fabric choice in terms of a material.
Right.
Where's
that material going? What kind of material is that?
I'm saying for an upholstery.
Okay, for upholstery. So you've chosen a fabric and you want to upholster an old chair that you happen to have. Where might that lead you to? Is that the question you're asking? The choice of fabric is so personal, and color and pattern.
I'm just talking about the material.
By material, you mean the actual
hemp.
Okay, that's my specialty.
Just as a start, yeah.
So, okay, you've chosen a hemp fabric. Does that lead to other decisions connected to that?
That's
hemp?
What I'm asking.
Well, it can. I mean, hemp happens to be a natural fiber, and it's all organic, and it's sustainable and all those things. So if you're thinking of keeping your home green and eco-friendly, to use an old phrase, then hemp is an interesting place to start, because then from there you could choose another organic cotton to make pillows out of after you've furnished your, upholstered your chair with your hemp fabric. And you start having these conversations about toxicity and cleanliness and toxic-free, fabrics. So again, it can start with that and lead to all those things. If you start with a fabric that you've just found in some local shop and it happens to be a vintage fabric that you love, then that can lead to, okay, well, I found this really cool funky fabric that I'm going to upholster my chair with, and now it's the coolest looking piece in my house. Where do I go from here? So maybe from there, you take a look at your windows and say, well, my windows are pretty boring. Maybe I should choose some kind of fabric that pairs with that fabric I just upholstered my chair.
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt right here just because my windows are pretty boring. So the architect's going to weigh in right here.
Oh, weigh in.
Just because.
Are you anti-drapery?
Well, no, I'm not anti-drapery, but I have to say, I have a minimalist approach to what we do with windows. Because from my point of view, we've thought very carefully about those boring windows that you described.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what they're looking at, how they're designed, how big they are. And I'm really a big, big, big fan of
naked
natural
windows.
Daylight. I'm not saying naked
okay,
windows.
Okay, natural daylight.
But I'm saying a pared-down window treatment.
Okay.
So, for instance, I know you and I worked on a project where we did some window valances.
We did.
Which was kind of a quiet way.
It is a quiet way, but I just worked with somebody who is in a condo, and it's a very kind of simple condo. There's no beautiful moldings or anything like that around the windows that you want to show off. So we did a really simple metallic, kind of subtle metallic gold fabric on the windows. And they're going to be pulled back most of the time.
Right.
So you're going to see the window.
Yes.
But this client wanted this in her home because it works with all these other funky
right.
modern pieces she has in her house.
Right.
And I think it's going to look great. And her windows are not very interesting.
Right.
They're just not. And there's plenty of light because there's so many windows. And
yes.
big doors that opened up to a back deck that let light in. So
well, actually, daylight became a problem on the project that I'm thinking of that you and I worked on in that. Then it started. Then the fabric that we chose.
Oh, the house
not
up in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it was fabric that we chose not for drapery. We chose it for window seat cushions.
Yeah.
Then there was the issue of, how do we protect this from fading in this big window?
This is true.
So we ended up, again, but we didn't go with a drapery there.
No, we didn't. We just went with that valance, and maybe the valance, which was this lovely fabric that matched the cushion,
well,
I think we introduced
a shade. So as a compromise.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah, because it was like, okay, absolutely, this is going to be a potential issue. Although, I'm going to segue. We've gotten sidetracked onto windows, but I'm just going to roll with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
At my place, I, too, have some Olivera textile pillows.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose, some of them we had custom made, but there were two that I bought that you had that were stock. You'd already made them.
Okay.
And they had, I'm sure you know the name of the pattern, but the color was in the orange family. I don't know if you remember these. And then the other pillows that we had made custom were much lighter.
The pattern was called Madeira Vine, and it was a marigold orange. I remember
that. There
we go,
marigold orange.
Yes.
So this is in our southwest-facing windows. And then we have these pillows on a sectional there. And in the beginning, when I chose, I'm bringing this up because when I responded to that, what'd you call it, marigold?
Marigold orange.
I responded to that color.
Yeah, it's
and
warm.
So I wanted those. And I was like, oh, let's start with these. But then because my space is semi-open to other spaces, we were choosing a kind of a more neutral palette for the complementary pillows.
Yes.
And I remember at the time we were like, huh.
The color was sand.
Yes. Does this orange work with this sand palette?
And it did.
And
absolutely.
It did.
I have to say
it does more so now. And I feel like it does more so now because
why?
They
Because it
faded.
Faded?
But it's beautiful.
Oh.
Like to me, I am a fan of
is
patina.
Is it direct exposure to the
well,
sun?
Well, it's like southwest and we don't,
we have
some Roman shades that are mostly up because I love daylight.
Well,
so
see, there you go. Sunlight.
Yes.
It's wonderful, but textiles are victims of sunlight.
But in this case, I'd just like to make the case that I don't feel it was like a victim. I actually
think
it
worked.
Okay,
you like the way it faded out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting because now it's more subdued. It's
more
softer.
Subdued. So I feel like now it relates better to the other ones.
Well, thank you for that. I want all clients to say that. not like shrieking, oh my God, my fabrics have faded. No, we don't want that.
Well, I'm going to back up now because I want to go touch on some of the architectural aspects of this with that. Because, again, I wanted today discuss kind of beginning decisions, the decisions that you make up front that kind of lead to a cascade of other decisions. And from an architectural standpoint, you mentioned it in the intro, one of those beginning decisions is site selection.
Big, big
now, decision. Not everyone
has the luxury of a site selection. Yeah,
but it could also be, maybe we don't use the word site as just property selection. So maybe you're buying a home. It exists. Mm-hmm. But you're making an investment and a choice in this particular home in this specific site or location. Mm-hmm. And how does that choice affect your decision? So that is you're accepting the conditions of the context.
Uh-huh.
And this is what do I do to relate to or be in conversation with that.
Okay.
And my kind of tidbit that I'd like to put out there is that you don't need to feel like you have to mimic or repeat when you're choosing how you're going to approach your home, the styles of the houses around you.
Oh.
So I think some people, they're like, oh, I can't live in that neighborhood because I want a modern house. And that neighborhood doesn't have modern houses. And I would simply say a couple things. And starting off just with the discussion of style,
mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of kind of repeating or trying to echo an existing style. So if someone says, I want a Victorian home, or I want an arts and crafts home, mm-hmm. or I want a modern home, I don't then go to my pattern book and make said home. What I want to do is I want to talk to them, what is it about that style that they're connecting to? What is it about a Victorian home that appeals to them? And then they might say, oh, I love the detailing. I love the interior nooks and crannies.
And what if that Victorian home that they want is in a neighborhood of only modern houses? Does that
That's unusual. I would say that's an unusual example.
This is true.
But I'm just saying what I want to do is borrow from the aspects of the style that they like, but not try to recreate the style. Styles were created in certain time periods
Very
in
good.
Response to certain conditions,
Very
political, cultural,
absolutely.
Economical. So you don't want to go around doing little cookie cutter reproductions, not in my world.
Mm-hmm.
So this with that is say you are choosing something that's surrounded by, I'll give an example of a context that I'm familiar with. So my neighborhood, is in a village, very small lots, and a lot of the houses were built in the 1920s and 30s.
Very cottagey.
You could use that word. I don't even want to use that word because for some people that implies style.
Okay.
They are of smaller scale, simple massing, sometimes vernacular designs, I would say that, rather
and
than
And by
cottage.
Vernacular designs, for those of us who aren't
so
in your
vernacular
world.
Would be kind of the region, the way people were building at the time. And so they are kind of almost folksy, I might say, in appearance, some of them.
I've been there. I get that.
And what that's coming from, in part, is due to their massing. And massing is the volume or form of your house. And also the way those forms are put together are very simple in my neighborhood.
Yes.
That's what's the vernacular. So you kind of have the larger, often rectangle, that is the main living space, and then something branching off of it, which might be the bedroom spaces or even the kitchen.
Okay.
So there's kind of a certain logic
like
to how
grew up in.
Yeah, how they're assembled.
Very often.
So if your house is going to be among these, it doesn't mean you need to make a similarly styled vernacular home. But I do think you want your home to be in conversation with the massing of the homes in your neighborhood, with the scale of the homes in your neighborhood.
So you wouldn't want to build a giant McMansion in a neighborhood of these kinds of
Or perhaps anywhere, but particularly in this neighborhood. Because
perhaps anywhere. That's the good point.
Right, because a McMansion would fill the lot and be massive, right? Like kind of a
out of context with everything
huge
else.
Huge monolith, right. And so these houses are more little masses, smaller scale, leaving a lot of the lot to be enjoyed as outdoor space. So your house could be modern in style or design, but you would want the massing and the scale to respond and be in conversation with the context.
Understood.
So you don't feel trapped in by kind of the environment you're moving into stylistically, but you do want to be in conversation, I think, in a neighborly way.
And do you have to, you must have to take into consideration if somebody wants a house that's twice the size of, not a McMansion, but something twice the size of some of those homes that are there, do you do that? Do you say, yep, we can do that? And a good designer can probably figure out a way to give them more space and still feel like you're connected.
That's one of the tricky, like, again, when you said site selection in the introduction. Mm-hmm. Does a homeowner who wants a house three times the size of all the neighborhood homes necessarily want to be in the neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
So you do want to have an informed decision. Now, it doesn't mean your house has to be tiny. There are certain things you can do to make a larger home appear smaller, more modest. And that is a design challenge that an architect, including myself, enjoy. It's like, okay, well, how can we make this feel more... perhaps more like a compound of smaller pieces or more kind of break it down into smaller elements so it's not some big monolith.
Instead of going up, 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 maybe go
it's not necessarily a thing about up or horizontal. Again, massing is more than that. It's about, there's a book called Big House, Back House, Little House, Barn that is about, in a way, the way back in colonial New England, houses took shape. And that was, I'm kind of totally distilling this book, but my point is simply that you might have had an original house, and then you're like, oh, the family's growing, and now I want a separate kitchen addition. So then the kitchen is the separate thing added on. And it's like, oh, you know what? I have this business where I'm making, you know, jams at home. I need a studio. So that gets added on. And it's like, oh, now... we can get to the animals in the barn more easily by just connecting them through this space. So it was iterative, it was additive.
Thing. That could be a really beautiful thing in how they all connect on this piece of land.
Yes. And in the end, that's a large, if you were to add up all those components, that's a significant amount of square footage. But it doesn't present itself as a monolithic block on the street.
Right. And let me ask you this. Way back in the day, when they did this, there wasn't someone like you, necessarily, an architect. Helping them
is why we called vernacular.
Okay.
Is
it was
they
like
just,
a spontaneous
it
growth.
Was something that people did out of a need. I'm going to, I have an issue. I need a solution. I have a need. What's a common sense way of expanding my rectangular home so that I can accommodate this need? Well, I'll put this other rectangle, you know, abutting it in some way.
Yes.
So it was very kind of common sense, I guess, is what
and
I would
say. And we're talking
say.
About simple... design here, right? And I say simple because it's not something crazy modern like what Frank Gehry does, for instance. This is simple, modest.
I don't like
building.
That it seems like you're equating modern as something different than simple, which I don't see that.
No,
so,
not necessarily. But I'm thinking about these homes like in historic districts in New England of the barn, the home, the connecting little compound buildings. And there's something very simple about, and when I say simple, I just mean not over-designed.
Yes,
not,
which not, is also, you can have, I mean, that's also the kind of the key word behind most modern designs is that they're simple. Mm-hmm. So it's clean, you know, is another word for simple.
Okay.
So I don't, again, I just worry about people associating a style like this. With something that isn't necessarily about style. So I got sidetracked, but the point was simply to lead in these beginning decisions are bigger and they lead to the next decision and the bigger.
Very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Because my world comes toward the end.
Well,
you know,
in
what
that scenario.
What you put in the home is at the end. Your
Your
world is the whole beginning. You buy you buy a home or you buy a piece of land and then you want to build a house. That is huge in my head. To take that on. I mean,
but even once you get to the stage of the design where you're like, okay, now we're going to talk about what's inside this home. Even then, there's a bigger moment where you're making bigger decisions, like your point about is it going to be sustainable? Is that important to
Very
me?
Very important.
If
yes.
that's important to me, how is that going to guide my future decisions? So what this goes with that? That is sustainability.
The actual items that you choose to live with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. So it's balance. It's balance. And
you know what? I would say the word I would use is clarity. I think you want to have an idea of two things: where you want to start and where you want to end. And you want to obviously figure out how to connect those two. And so you want to pick a start point that you can see down the road is going to lead to the end point you're after.
Okay. And that's you as an architect help guide that process.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what people yes. hire you for.
Yes. But that's also kind of to think about, I feel, and you mentioned again in the intro, many a prospective homeowner or someone who's a, you know, a design client mm-hmm. for a renovation addition or what have you, it's the decisions that lie ahead that might cause them to have angst, right?
Uh-huh.
And so what I'm trying to figure out is how can we, through something like this, a podcast like this, share some information so that those homeowners, those potential clients, have some confidence in their decision-making.
Yes.
So that when they collaborate with you, you can kind of get on the train together and go to the same destination. So, you know, it's a kind of, you're not starting off with one person kind of overwhelmed and full of angst.
I'm sitting here overwhelmed and full of angst just listening and to then this whole process.
But then the other person like, oh, you know, this is what you want to do. It needs to be, it's a collaboration. But also I just feel like homeowners shouldn't be so overwhelmed. One decision leads to the next. Just start where you want to start.
Yes.
And look further ahead and just thinking that, okay, this ending makes sense for this start.
And for me, I would have to write it all down. Like you need a plan. A plan of
action.
Writing
is good.
A plan of action. I have never built a home, but I have renovated homes.
Right, right.
And it was thrilling. I spent way too much money. Like, I should have had a better plan. Windows should have come first instead of all of the lighting that I bought for that house. But yeah.
Even that, see, that's a good observation.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think
and some people,
now.
You might have gone to someone and said, you know, what's most important to me is not just daylight, but lighting in general. Like the lighting in this
beautiful
space.
Beautiful lighting.
Right.
Because I lived in New York for all those years in the dark.
Yeah.
Like we
yeah,
had windows at
right.
one end. I wanted
and
light.
And so, but that's a perfect, I think that's a really good example. If someone has that as a starting point, this is something I know. Daylight and nightlight, if you will, are really important to me. How can I shape space to maximize that?
Very nice.
You know, so then you know, okay, I'm talking about a certain solar orientation. Like just mm-hmm. by knowing that endpoint, you're like, okay, solar orientation is key, and the fact that you're suggesting that, you know, lighting in the evening, that is bringing in kind of objects into early into the design phase.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we think about products later.
Later, yes, I know.
But if you were to say...
But I wasn't building a home from scratch. It was
right.
a home that existed, and there
right.
were already fixtures and electrical, so
right.
I could think about the lighting
right.
kind of early on.
But would you say that there was a certain type of lighting you gravitated towards?
Yeah, modern.
Okay, so right there.
Yeah.
So if you know that, those are the two things you know, modern light and daylight.
Yeah.
That tells me as your designer and collaborator mm-hmm. so much as a starting point. Because now I have some vision, you know, kind of visual references
yeah.
to kind of go with the concept of window light, solar orientation.
See, now everyone should have someone like you at their beck and call when they do this. And if I had, I would have probably made different decisions. Because this is what I mean about there's so much to think about.
Right.
If you're building
right.
a home. And, you know, if you have a certain budget that is on the higher end, I think maybe you have a little more freedom about hiring an architect, about choosing a location that maybe is some exquisite piece of land somewhere. And there's a little more flexibility. I mean, you still have to be within your budget, whatever that is, but there's a little
right,
more flexibility.
Right, so in that case, the this with that is the budget. So
yeah.
So if someone's, if their start point is, you know what, my budget is so limited.
Mm.
My budget
yeah,
is...
Yeah, that's what I was making notes about. What happens if you have
yeah.
a very limited
So if
budget?
Your budget is really small, that's your start point.
That
drives yeah. everything.
Yeah.
And so then all
How do you make the most of what you found?
Exactly. All the decisions then come back to that initial point. So that's not just size and scale. That's probably also form. That's maintenance. Like,
yeah.
what
okay.
are we, you know? So whatever your, the main thing is figuring out what your priority is. And different You know, it could be, you know, and someone finds...
And you take know, on all kinds of projects.
Of
like
course,
this,
yeah. So, I mean, that's what makes it fun. It's
yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
everyone's different.
It's a challenge.
Every situation is different.
Exactly.
Say your property is an inherited property on the other end of the spectrum from the low-budget property.
Right.
And
lots of those in Bristol.
Yes. And then how does the fact that this is something that has meant something to your family and you have kind of some traditions associated with this property... how does that inform this, what you're going to do next?
Right.
So the this with that can be emotional. It can be site-specific. It could be...
You have to play psychologist as well, don't you?
Well, I think,
not to go off track.
I think a lot of architects and designers, we are kind of generalists.
Yeah.
I mean, homes are personal.
Right.
People get, that's...
Yeah.
There's
especially something that's inherited because there's so much history.
Yes. Now, say we were going to translate... Say we have this home that we've done on this inherited property and we have some inherited belongings. How do I kind of roll that into the next stage? What am I going to put in this home?
Right. Well, I think... As far as the this with that, if you have this being an inherited home, a vintage home, a historic home, what do you keep if there are furnishings in the home already, and what do you not keep, and how do you bring in new things? And I think that's where a selection where you layer in, you mix things up, you layer in some of those really special personal family heirlooms with maybe pieces that you own that are art on the wall or textiles that you have found that you love that are maybe modern, not necessarily old. But if I was just going to say, Katie, that I enjoy visiting artists' homes and apartments and lofts because there's a sense about them that they're not over-curated, over-styled like a lot of homes you see in magazines. They're lived in. That what's in their homes are meaningful items, lots of artwork on the walls, maybe beautiful textiles that they've collected, bedspreads and draperies, etc. But there's a meaningful collection of things. And if you own an inherited home, it's already meaningful because it's this historic home that your family has owned for generations, maybe. And so if you don't want to feel like it's this old place, you want to kind of feel like it's yours and it's new, you bring in things that mean something to you. And maybe that's art, modern art in this vintage, in this inherited old home. And maybe it's some beautiful new textiles. So it's how you layer these pieces together and not being afraid to mix things up. And
also maybe using something that's in that inherited home that's a favorite thing.
Exactly.
Like what if this chair, the upholstery on this chair.
Yeah, Victorian chair.
Right.
You could put a brand new fabric on it, a modern
fabric
on that thing, which I've had done.
So that's interesting because that's kind of, you would think
you
would want to preserve.
Right there in one piece.
Yeah.
But, I personally like historic homes, but I like mixing up what's in that home and how you paint the colors in that home and how you treat the home. I don't want to live in some museum.
No.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I was just thinking, say it's a chair that's not completely upholstered. Like, I'm just thinking, my dining chairs, for instance, the ones that you helped me recover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those are chairs that had been my parents' chairs. It's not like
these
fantastic antiques, but my mother had stripped them. They were mahogany chairs.
Okay,
I don't know if you remember.
That's nice.
So she stripped the finish off, which I loved because that gave them kind of this Scandinavian, she waxed them.
Oh, yes.
And then, but they had these sad, I don't know if you remember the fabric, but they had these sad cushions. So for me, I came to you because I was like, okay, I don't want these sad cushions.
And that was.
But I love
exactly
this chair.
Exactly what I'm talking about. Because the fabric was a clean kind of bold, simple, elegant floral pattern that felt new, that felt modern.
Absolutely. But I could still have the treasured, wood chair that had been my parents'.
And guess what? I think owning a piece of old furniture that is so sturdy you could never find something to replace it, it is well worth recovering that chair in a new fabric that you love.
Well, even the fact that she'd gone through the labor of hand stripping it.
That's a ton
because
of work.
Because I'm not doing that.
Yeah, that is a lot of work.
So
I've done it. I don't like
it. Yeah. And I think of mahogany, this is a little side segue here, can feel somewhat stilted and little
heavy.
But once she stripped it.
Was it like a light color?
It got kind of I would say it was warm. It was no longer that like chestnut brownie color.
Yeah,
it was more like a beigey kind of sand. Kind of back to that sand palette.
Like your architect hero's kind of home, that the colors in that home.
Well,
warm,
her colors were more
wood.
I'd say those were richer.
Venka Selmar.
Yes.
Selmar. Yeah.
Yes. No, this was a little more faded, I would
say.
But anyway, they have a lovely patina, and then putting your new kind of bold, but again, I chose the more neutral colors.
Yeah.
To me, was a good marriage of the two.
Very nice.
So this what we're talking about right now, I'm thinking this might be a good way to segue into future episodes of This With That.
Good, tell me.
Because I'm thinking right now, again, we've been speaking generally, but I think we might in the future want to get a little more specific. So kind of help people with the more fine-tuned decision-making of what this with that is. And here we're speaking kind of broadly.
Yeah, because you've just found the home.
Right.
And you're just figuring out what you want to
or,
do.
Or, you know what? We're hoping someday that we'll have listeners. And wouldn't it be nice if listeners sent us a question?
Oh, I would love that.
So someone might send it and they say, we have this arts and crafts home and we want to do X to it. What do we do? So like that might be a good opportunity for us to go in a little more depth in response to a specific situation.
Yeah, and we could even pretend we have a caller and we could come up
with our friends could submit questions.
Yeah, like I own this Victorian house in Bristol, Rhode Island.
Exactly.
Or in Rhode Island. And I need to know
what to do with it. Perfect.
Do you do lighting like I did and tear walls down that you probably shouldn't have torn down? Or do you just hold a minute and hire
and by
Katie
the time,
to help you advise?
If anyone hears this, hopefully by that time we'll have a website. So a listener would be able to go to the website
and see images.
And send us a query, I'm thinking initially, so we would know what their question is. And then also if we follow up with them, we'd say, send us a few photos. Yeah. And then what we're planning on doing is having let's figure this out. Having companion blog posts, if you will, that go with each podcast. So people, for instance, that one we did initially, they'll be able to go there and look at some images of Venka Selmers
and Sonia Delaunay.
Exactly.
And homes that we are talking about.
And so
about.
Actually for this one, we'll think of some imagery that makes sense to post also. Like maybe even my dining room chairs, I'm thinking, Dawn, with your beautiful textiles.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's...
Are we winding up?
I think we're winding up. And let's look forward to the next topic, whatever it may be.
Okay.
And hope we have
It might be sustainability since we started on that topic today.
I think that would be good.
And I have a lot to say about
that. Yeah. And we could start because, again, big topic.
Big topic. But we're going to end with this. How much stuff do we really need in our homes? How big a home do we really need today? Thinking about today, because I have young sons with climate change and everything going
on.
That's a big
topic. But that ties in also to the this with that, because certainly a more clean, modern sensibility tends to have fewer things in it.
Less is more.
Which is part of the reason people, are attracted to that.
Yes.
Kind of gives you breathing room. But yes, we'll hit on all this stuff.
Oh, good. See, we can keep talking for the next 2 hours.
Absolutely.
You can lock the door and not let anyone in. Just take over the podcast room. Okay.
All right. Signing off.
Signing
Thank you.
Off.
Take
Thank
care.
You.
Bye.
Bye-bye.